It's time for Building the Game with Jason and Friends.
Hello and welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, April 1st. Good night. Just roll credits here.
Some people would call that the best episode ever. So,
oh my god, incredible!
We did have that happen recently when Clarence Simpson was on, you're Chris, and he said
everyone
really
is named
smart
Chris
in
now.
The first 5 minutes, and we were just like, yeah, yeah. There was a Beastie Boys song called "The Larry Routine," where everybody would go around and say like, "His new name is Larry," and everybody would say it in a different way.
The Larry Routine.
So yeah, so like,
you think I'm. You don't think I'm old enough to know the Beastie Boys?
Oh, no. Oh, gosh, Jamie. I just don't think you're cool enough to listen to the Beastie Boys.
That's way more fair.
This episode got good quick.
No, I mean, like, I don't. Yeah, no. I am not surprised that you know and or like the Beastie Boys because they're fantastic. And
I definitely know and or like them, but I'm not going to ever clarify.
That's fine. You know some of the lyrics, and you know a song that was not like a popular song, so it does give me some input. Well, hey, I'm Jason. You heard your moderator, Chris, a.k.a. Chris Michaud, because I'm convinced that your moderator, Chris, is your legal name. And also Jamie Sabriel.
That's me.
That's all who's hanging out tonight on this crazy podcast we call Building the Game. Why are you two here? Why? That's the question I have. Chris, as always, said, hey, I'm coming on the podcast, and co-host Jamie's coming with me.
I asked Jamie first.
Well,
I felt like that was a good thing to do before I just...
If I asked
you never asked
you
me.
You hooked the cane around my neck and dragged me on stage. That's what happened.
What kind of respect is this? You ask Jamie, what is that?
The conversation was like, are you going to talk about Granite Game Summit on the show? Have you already recorded that episode? And Jamie said, no. And I said, let's go do that. And then we pitched the idea.
That was the whole thing.
Fantastic.
Yeah. That was literally the whole conversation. I was like, hey, yeah, sure. I don't know when Jason's free. And then Chris was like, I will literally start a message right now. And then it happened. And that was the extent of the planning.
And it actually was perfect timing because I have a couple upcoming episodes I've been trying to schedule. And I was like, I'm just going to sneak this in first.
Nice.
Because I can.
Yeah, and PAX East just happened too, if you want to do that recap.
Yeah, I was going to, you're welcome to say how that went for you. Yeah, I wasn't going to do like a full-on recap of PAX East because I don't like PAX East because I don't ever get to go. So.
Oh, well.
Same could be said for Granite Game Summit, actually. But I really want to go to Granite Game Summit.
Yeah, PAX East is one of those, it's like it's close enough that I could get there and have never gone.
It's just, to me, like, it's another big convention, and I can only personally handle so many of those. So, like, I would just PAX Unplugged. But if you're going to both, more power to you. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, so. I mean, I have the advantage of being able to just take the train in. I get to wake up at my own home and make breakfast and then hop on the train and head in. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, especially for people in board game world, in case you're feeling like you're left out of PAX East, it's actually not huge board games. It's kind of big, and it's grown. It's been growing in board game world. It's still probably a little less than half, but they have a big free play library, which is cool. I generally just go there, hang out on the board game side of things, and then on Sunday I'll make the rounds and look for fun indie games that look interesting. But it's still a little more than half video games and panels, and I kind of ignore panels. But long story short is that it went really well. It's step two of my new plan for conventions, which Granite Game Summit kicked off, which is the actual thing that we're talking about, because Chris and I were both there.
It's true, yeah. But no, PAX East, I've heard nothing but good things about it. Unpub is there with some presents and stuff.
Yep.
And yeah, no, it. If I
Unpub
lived out where
presents.
Y'all live, I would, yes.
Mm-hmm. That sounds exciting. I want to get presents at Unpub.
No, yeah. Presents, like it's haunted. The ghost of Unpub past is really what shows up.
We finished the game I was testing, and I felt a cold chill, which could only mean the game is haunted and not that it was broken and not worth pursuing.
No, it's definitely...
I did play a haunted game at Granite Game Summit.
Ah, that's what we call foreshadowing. So,
But I was just going to say, if I lived where you did, I would absolutely go to Granite Game Summit. Well, I would also go there, but I would absolutely go to Pax East because it'd be an easy train ride in. And I'm jealous because I don't ever get to ride trains. If I want to ride a train, it's to Chicago, and it's actually not a great train ride from here. So,
Jason, let me tell you about the tea. Luxurious.
Our wondrous wonder. Yes. And how much we love it.
Let me tell you about the L, okay? Well, all right. Let's talk about Granite Game Summit, y'all. I'll let you take it away, and you two can just beguile us with your stories of haunted games.
So Granite Game Summit, just for some context, is probably my favorite convention of the year. Been going on for a good decade or so, off and on, pandemic willing.
Something like that.
It picked up from an event called Reunity Games, which was like a one day event. Everybody just went and brought all their own games, and it was just in and out in one day. I'm sorry, it was called Unity Games. Now it's called Reunity. That's another story for another time. But this was sort of an evolution from that.
We have covered that many, many years ago, or I don't know how many years ago. It was a while ago. Kimberly was on and talked about Granite Game Summit, and actually we talked a lot about her safety plans and stuff that she has in place there, and it was fantastic. So
It's cool. It's one of the few conventions where masks are still mandatory.
Nice.
Yes, there are mask-free areas that you can play if you so choose, but the main gaming hall is a mask space.
Also, we'll all shame you.
Well, if people want to go do what they want, that's fine. Just don't do it around me. I had COVID. I don't want it again.
But G2S is close to my heart because back when I was a podcaster, which is certainly not the case today, they were always very supportive of just the weird stunts that we would do. And so they let us do live shows every year and like run tournaments and stuff. And then when I transitioned into game design for a hot minute, I did lots and lots of playtesting there. They had something called Designer Alley, where they just set aside dedicated space for you to sit and test or show off your game or whatever that form that may be. As long as it's an unpublished game, they give you a showcase for it. And then in recent years, I've done my game show shenanigans there and hosted a live Saturday night game show for the last 2 years. They have always been incredibly kind and welcoming. And it is, in my view, one of the best run conventions. It is a kind of place where there are 1,000 games lining the walls, all of which people just brought and just leave there, which is crazy to me. For the hundreds of people that they have, people will just leave their game with a sign-up sheet and trust that it will be okay at the end of the weekend.
Yep.
That's cool.
It astonishes me every time I see it. It's just like, I am way too cranky about the condition of my games to trust it.
Chris is like, and this is how I fill out my board game collection.
Pretty much, you know, you just take a couple off the top and it all works out fine. I actually never gotten to the place where I've just left my games out, but it is pretty much guaranteed that the more popular titles you will have access to, and you can manage your luggage from there. I never do. Jamie and I actually met at G2S a couple of years ago, was it?
Yeah, it was. So I wasn't able to go last year. So it was the year before. So yeah, 2 years ago or three G2Ss ago.
Yeah. So I figured it would be fun to do some like team coverage and just talk about experiences there. Which
love it.
It's rapidly become one of my favorite conventions too. I've been twice now, and the first time was like there's one small thing that bugged me and many, many awesome things that were great and cool. And the small thing is very minor. It's just there's someone on the microphone that makes announcements and they say, "Ladies and gentlemen." They're in the habit of saying "ladies and gentlemen." And I'm like, "Oh, hey, could we change that?" And they're like, "Oh, yeah, we'll talk about it." And I was like, "Great." And that's the extent of it. The rest of it is super dope. To loop back to that wall of games, I want to stress how wild that is to me, because it really it makes me feel like I am getting to know people and their collections, right? Because you put your name and you write down all the games that you have, and then you put little slips of paper in the board games. And so it's individual stacks, like your whole collection is in an area and there's a number up above so people know where to put it back. And just scanning it, like, yeah, the more popular titles, like Chris said, like, yeah, like every third pile has Wingspan and stuff like that. But I also saw a ton of Kickstarter games. I saw games by friends of mine. I thought it was, and that's super cool. You know, it's
Barbie
just like
Monopoly was on one of those piles.
Barbie Monopoly. Yeah. We saw Barbie Monopoly.
If I had to guess if you were going to steal a game, Chris.
Barbie
Monopoly. You know, I don't have to because we do own that game.
It's funny that y'all are like, oh, yeah. And these people just, like, I started a board game club recently in my kids' middle school, and those little heathens, man. With the games, like, I'm like, can you just be careful with that? Like, can you be careful with that?
Like, yeah.
And at the end, we have like a group of us that searches all around to make sure things actually made it back in the box. And sometimes they don't. So, yeah. So I'm impressed that people are just so generous with their games to put them out there like that. I love that.
Yeah. I could not do it. I am not even at the point where I let my housemates play my games when I'm not there.
Wow.
And I know that they won't bridge shuffle my cards, which is one of the many things that I get cranky about.
Oh, yeah, Jamie, they run a tight ship with their games. Wow.
I do. I get real antsy about it.
Makes me crazy. I never say anything. Because it's not a hill I want to die on. But if I see people bending my cards in that certain way, it's like, oh, God, I don't know.
Oh, my God. Yeah. No, I can't do it.
You have to be like, how bad do I want to be friends with these people? how do you mix your cards if you don't shuffle them?
I mean, the games that I love, I have sleeved. And if they're not sleeved, then I shuffle them. And I know how to bridge shuffle without bending the cards.
I know this is an aside, and I'm sorry, Chris. I'm sorry. You come on the show, and then Jamie and I argue. But listen, I just have to clarify something, because I have nothing against people that want to sleeve their cards. I personally think it's ridiculous, but I don't care. Like, it doesn't matter. Like, I'll play a game that's sleeved. I won't take this time to sleeve a game, because I used to play like D&D minis, and I had 1,500 cards sleeved. And after that, I said, I will never do this again. This is awful, right? I just have to know, are you one of those people that would post on a Kickstarter and say, are sleeved cards going to fit in the box?
Well, I'm not the kind of person that posts on a Kickstarter ever. But if I get a Kickstarter game, and the sleeved cards don't fit in the box, I just take out the insert.
You're like, one on BGG. See? Thank you. So basically what you're saying is, The game was designed to fit the cards, and then you make your own solution. Good on you.
Yeah.
I have more respect for you than I did before I knew you sleeved cards.
Wow.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. See how much
I feel like this is a weird hill to die on, Jason.
I'm not dying.
I had to sleeve this 1,500 card game, and now I begrudge anyone who sleeves their game ever.
Here's, I think, why it's a hill to die on for me. Because so many Kickstarters I saw where people were like, are the sleeve cards going to fit in the box? And they get real upset about it. And then I see, like, Tir na n'og, which the box has a little bit of room inside. Not a lot, but it's got a bit of room inside, right? You maybe put an expansion there if we make expansions, all sorts of things.
Oh, hey.
Right? You could sleeve the cards and put them in there if you wanted to, right? But then people are like, oh, why is the box slightly bigger than it needs to be? What a travesty. And I'm like, see, there's no pleasing everyone. So, anyway,
I mean, people have always been like that, Jason. I don't know if this is just something you found out recently, but that's the thing about people.
So I just want to spell out that the April Fool's joke for this episode is, you think we're going to talk about this convention, and we're actually just listening to two hosts kill each other.
Over card sleeves.
Gotcha.
No, God. I actually feel a lot better getting that off my chest. I'm gonna be honest. Like, I feel good that we
are in therapy.
Jamie is
very easy to talk to.
Thank you. This is me practicing for when I start making therapeutic games, which I messaged you about and you never responded.
You did?
Yeah. I was like, let me know if I can help with compulsion.
Back at it.
I wanna help with compulsion.
No, no. I super appreciate that. No, no sniping there. I appreciate that. I am so behind it and missed so many messages because school just got for a few weeks.
Yeah, no worries.
And I actually thought you had messaged about a show and I felt bad that I hadn't got back to you, but you actually messaged about that. So I feel even worse now. So I will get back to you.
I think maybe I did. No, it's fine. So, I was, I harbored no anxiety and was 100% confident that that's what happened. So
yeah,
cool
sorry
to
about
know
that.
That it was confirmed.
I would love to chat with you about that because I need to get back to that one. So
yeah. And it's a thing that is really, really important to me. Like individually, I am eagerly awaiting the time that I can sit my best friends down and play the game and not tell them the theme or the name and then like have the big moment, the big reveal later on.
But
if you want to talk about hosts killing each other, we could talk about how I threw a coffee at Chris Michaud.
Yeah, no, this is true.
Let's hash this out.
Threw a coffee at Chris Michaud. This is a true story. This is probably one of the highlights of Granite Game Summit for both of
absolutely
us,
for me.
Chris didn't even have to pay me for it. Normally you have to pay for that.
Charge extra for that service.
Yeah.
I mean, I paid for it in burns, but
you said you were only mildly burned.
I mean, just mildly. But just to be clear, and I want to
put
this
adrenaline
on the record, there were burns. So here's what happened. Okay. Jamie said, I want to show you my favorite game of all time. We'll book an appointment to do it. Done. So Melanie and I, my wife Melanie, who I go to Granite Game Summit with every year, we went
to get
coffee, as we usually do. We went to Dunkin' Donuts. We got some of the most, I would say, brief service. We'll go with that. It's very much like, what do you want? Pull up. Those are the only words that you hear.
Wow. Nice.
And then they give you the coffee and then they just shut the window and you drive away. But
it's amazing.
But I had a large Dunkin' Donuts coffee with whole milk and churro syrup was my beverage of choice for the entire weekend.
Sounds good.
And I'm sipping on this while Jamie is teaching the rules. And they pick up the box lid to move it and accidentally bump my coffee in such a way that it goes bam all over my lap and shirt. And it's pretty fresh. I'm maybe an eighth of the way down in this thing.
No.
And I'm like, whoa. Now I'm staying on site. So, hey, good news. I have immediate access to clothing. So we just had to pause the rules explanation. I went, I got fresh clothing. Everything was absolutely fine. I was mildly uncomfortable for like a minute. But the most important thing is that I now have leverage. And that is something.
Oh, it immediately became an inside joke. I tried to play it off like a now you know not to mess with me. And Chris was like, we're not. No, that's not the direction we're going. I have blackmail material now. And I'm like, oh, OK. Yeah, you're not wrong.
What you do with blackmail material is you just talk immediately about it in a public forum like this one. But
my first thought was to make a joke about whether or not you were like the McDonald's lady and it went in your crotch region. It turns out it did. So yep. I'm sorry about that. I am sorry.
It was
for
more
you.
Of the midriff.
Not as sorry as Jamie's going to be, but,
oh my God. Yeah.
But in the end of the day,
good time.
Clank was good. Clank was fun.
Clank, still my favorite game. All right, so let me give you a play-by-play of your mistakes there, Chris. Your first mistake was going to Dunkin' Donuts, but the second one is that you broke another... You want to talk about Jamie being a little anxiety-ridden during game night? In my home, it is banned to have any beverage on the same surface as the game. It has to be at least a foot lower. Or
and we now know that's because Jamie is the one who's going to spill it.
I have done it twice already. I've destroyed my first printing of Agricola and my first printing of Ascension because of a rogue hot toddy and cup of water, respectively. And two of them were my fault. And then a third game of mine got destroyed and it was someone else's fault. But the game I didn't like very much anyway, so I don't even care.
The only game I've ever had semi-destroyed was Codenames at a bar and Rob Couch. The infamous Rob Couch spilled an entire beer, a whole beer, thankfully,
nice.
Right across the thing. And I literally was the first time I'd opened the game and played with people. And he was like, I'm going to buy you a new one. And so he bought me a new one. And then I gave it to him and he said, I'm going to need the other copy though. So he still plays with the beer stained copy. It's like, I'm going to take that. I was like, okay.
Wow. That's dedication.
Yeah.
That's cool. I mean, I got to salvage my games for parts. So there was that. But yeah, we played Clank. Clank was awesome. That was part of my many-step plan to have a more relaxing and less stressful and less scheduled. You were the only thing I scheduled, Chris. The only thing I scheduled for that entire weekend. That. The only time I looked at my calendar was to...
Just wrote in there, time out, Chris.
But you bring up something that actually I think has some relevance to the design community, which is the idea of going to a convention as a civilian now and then.
Yeah.
And not going to go do a lot of business, right?
Gosh, I really struggle with that one because there are no conventions near me that I can do that other than Grand Con, and that is historically been a great business convention for me. So I really struggle. I completely agree with that and think I'll probably never get to do it, unfortunately, is my guess. So
I think you just got to prioritize it. Because honestly, like, this is the big, big thing for me between PAX East and Granite Game Summit. Like, I got hyper, hyper burnt out on conventions in 2023 because I was... and Jason, you and I have talked about
this. You worked at everyone. I go and I do the game thing. Like, you worked and did the game thing.
Yeah. And that's so a lot. It was a lot. It was way too much. And but part of that, like an underpinning, is that I realized that I was comparing myself to other designers, and in a creative field, comparison is the death knell to creativity and fun, you know? And so I was looking at other designers and I was like, all right, cool. Like in the first few months of 2023, many amazing things happened. I went to Gamma, I got two games signed, I got two development contracts, one of them was canceled by Crunchyroll, because boo, Crunchyroll. But the people who hired me were very excited to hire me. And a bunch of other stuff happened, I was like on another podcast and all this other stuff. And so I felt like I had to keep going, like to keep up the momentum and like strike while the iron's hot. And, you know, this is the springboard to me getting my name out there and becoming a household name. And so I was like, I have to get more games signed. And then I started pitching games that I didn't feel 100% ready to pitch, and lots of other stuff that just made me feel really, really burnt out. And it sucked all the fun out of conventions. And the thing that really made me realize it is PAX Unplugged is a convention where I can see a lot of friends that I only know online. Like, PAX Unplugged is the one time that I get to see them. And I was so busy between I only worked for 2 of the 4 days, but the rest of the time was filled with publisher meetings and playtests and all this other stuff. I literally could not hang out with anyone unless it was in a group. And so I had to blow off a bunch of my friends that I only get to see once a year. And I was like, nope, that's not cool. I don't like that. And so for 2024, my mission is to scale back what I'm doing, work on just the games that I love and have a ton of fun with. So Elemistic, Fight Sequence, Hearts of Sin. We'll see if another one is added. I'm doing a couple co-designs, but those are easy, easier because not all the weight is on me. But other than that, I'm just going to try to go to a few conventions, like you said, as a civilian, to just, you know, absorb the vibes and make them fun again. And let me tell you, throwing a coffee at Chris was one of the highlights.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Who hasn't wanted to throw a coffee at Chris?
Right? I got to live the dream.
Certainly nobody that I've talked to. But... I do want to talk about one prototype that I played, which I'm not sure has been talked about on this show before, but it's a game called Peepover. Jamie, I don't know if you had a chance to play this, but this is Chip Ove. His daughter, Eve, designed this game. She's a little...
I was told about it, but I did not get to play it.
Okay, then let me regale you with this, because this was a fun experience. So... Eve is a little older than my daughter. My daughter is 9. Eve has designed this game about marshmallow peeps, and it is a cooperative game in which you need to plan a sleepover and get a certain number of points worth of your peep friends to come over and join the sleepover before you get into an argument with your mom. And...
That's excellent.
It sounds like somebody lived that experience.
Hand-drawn. Yep. Every single icon is hand-drawn. This is all just pen on paper design, right? And the idea is that you are managing money and resources. So, like, for example, you have a sort of marketplace of peep friends that you could invite, but one of them, you need to have a special stuffy at your sleepover. Another one wants to watch a certain kind of movie. Another one won't hang out with this other peep or whatever. And you're trying to get all the things that you need to put at your party to make it a cool enough party. But if you run out of resources, then you have to ask mom for a favor. And hidden in that deck are argument cards. And if you flip over too many of those, game over. You've pushed mom too far. And you're grounded. So
got it. Too far.
I see why you're interested in this game, because the drawback mechanic sounds exactly like Clank. So
I was seeing how it's so much like Barbie Monopoly personally, but
that too. Yeah, it's we are currently sculpting the psychographic Venn diagram of Chris's entire board game brain here.
But let me tell you exactly. And this has now happened twice. I've played this at two different Granite Game Summits. And in both sessions, I walked away having cried laughing. Because the movies in the game give some sort of like a passive effect on just how you play. Like, you know, it just adds one extra rule like many do. And before the game, Eve shows off all the movies. They're like on an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper. Hand-drawn art, and it's like a poster for the movie that you intend to play at your party.
Oh, so, cool.
And it depends if it's G or PG rated, that affects who will and won't come to your party, right? But they're all, of course, peep-themed movies, so we're talking like Peepless in Seattle, Peep Impact, but oh both God. Years in a row... She absolutely got me with this. She reveals Superman 4, The Quest for Peeps.
Oh my God.
all the movies you can include.
That's amazing. Amazing.
I absolutely tears running down my face. Amazing experience. Playing this game. From an up-and-coming young designer who I think did a very good job with it. And what was interesting about the experience, too, is that I don't know how much involvement Chip has had in sort of guiding her hand in the design, nor have I asked, because that's not my business, right? You know, she's there to present it. She's presenting her own ideas. But she seems very good about listening to feedback, which is a skill that even folks my age – sometimes myself included, aren't always good at, right? But she was very attentive and understood and sought to understand and wasn't at all defensive when people made suggestions. And so I thought that was just a really cool experience that you would probably only get at Granite Game Summit with this unique combination of people.
That's fantastic.
And of course, we have our annual tradition where we always go get Chinese food after Designer Alley. So we did that too, and that was a lot of fun.
That sounds dope.
That's fantastic.
I've been thinking about that a lot, about the like the skill of receiving feedback and how that's just as important as giving feedback. And I think that a lot of people in the community put way too much pressure on the person giving the feedback, forgetting that it's also a skill to receive feedback, just like it's a skill to give feedback. And so both need to be present. And it can be hard if you tip the scale, you know, in one direction or another, like just as it would be tough if someone is like a bulldozer, a wrecking ball going around giving feedback that they don't think about at all. And people are like, well, actually,
you're making fun of Miley Cyrus.
I'm making fun of Jamie like circa ball. The first 7 years of them trying to give feedback to people and not understanding how they were a wrecking ball knocking down people's buildings.
I mean, Miley Cyrus is a lot of things, but I think
like non-binary.
I think Miley Cyrus's biggest problem is always suggesting mechanics where they don't belong. is always trying to add things when giving feedback.
Yeah. You got to remove it.
Right. Right. Yeah. Sometimes
you consider adding this, like Miley, just calm down.
Are we just projecting all of our playtesting feedback woes onto Miley Cyrus? Because
I think that's what we're doing here.
I think so. Yeah.
I feel like there are better targets. I don't know Jamie. Who they are. What? Yeah, like me.
Like Jamie.
Absolutely. Yeah. So. Yeah. This is why I freelance. I freelance as a punching bag for your anxieties around playtesting feedback.
You don't get paid for that job.
Pretty marketable. there's money in that. I'm not sure exactly how, but
it's true.
I mean, if you figure it out, let me know, because I haven't been paid for it yet.
So far, this is what I understand about Granite Game Summit. Everybody puts their games out in hopes no one steals them. Jamie likes card sleeves. Jamie likes to spill coffee on people. Chris likes churro syrup. And there was a game about Superman 4 designed by a child who takes feedback very well.
Yeah. I think we're caught up so far. Scene. I think...
we're up to speed, in case you're just tuning in now, because that's how podcasts work.
To the live stream of the podcast.
Let's just skip this one until about halfway and see if this picks up. That's the internal monologue I think a lot of people.
No, they just listen to it on like 12 speed. So,
oh god,
it's like 18 speed, like a mountain bike.
Wow. Tone correction, so everyone is just chipmunks the whole time.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the best.
I tried.
How did?
I tried. Oh, it was awful.
Yeah, don't do it. I mean, I can't even do like 1.5 times. I was like, this is creepy. Mm-hmm. Chris, how did Mall Night Long go?
I think we should probably. Sorry, go ahead.
I was trying to move away from it. I was trying.
I'm just gonna mute.
For all,
it's just me. You know what I love about all of that is that both of you tried to segue at the same time, and neither of it was me.
I was trying to segue to you.
Yeah.
Does that?
See, I'm usually the one that accidentally starts producing when I'm sitting on my job.
You'll be like, Jason, let's just get back on topic here.
It's such a bad habit. I've done it at least once this episode. I'm so sorry.
You can tell I don't have a lot of practice doing it. Because I'm so unnatural at it.
Jamie is the I'm somewhere in the middle, but Jamie's the opposite of you. They attempt to segue to anything but the topic.
It's just we have conversations and it makes things popcorn into my brain that are fun.
It's why we're bad when we're on episodes together, because we both think like that.
Our episodes are an hour 45 before they're trimmed down for the.
If only we knew of a moderator named Chris. Who was yours?
Yes, specifically, they have to be named Chris. Maybe your moderator, Chris.
Well, start a Patreon and maybe you can afford the service. But anyway, someone asked me about Mall Night Long. Let's talk about that. That was a fun presentation. I'll get the plug in now. So I host game shows door to door. Basically, it's a weird business model, but it seems to work for me. Where people hire me to put on a sort of 2-hour game show presentation. I do a lot of them over Zoom just for families and small groups. And now and then I'll catch a gig at an event like this where I can do it live and in person. And it's like a 2-hour experience where I make you feel like you're on a television game show.
It's amazing.
I was lucky enough
to hire Chris.
Yeah, you should. Play them all night long at gmail.com. We'll talk about it. But, So in this instance, I ran the game set that I ran in Las Vegas last year. One of the nice things about Mall Night Long is that if nobody in the audience has seen the show before, then I can just do the same material again and again. So it's not like suckers who make a new podcast every week. You just make the same
just
thing and show
that
it to
went
people
to see it in Vegas and then went to GGS and were like, come on, I've already seen this.
There was one person in the audience, maybe two, who had helped me test it, and they kept their mouths shut, so it was all good there. But It was a lively crowd. It was in the small theater area downstairs where they do events. And then the night before, and I haven't caught this yet, and I regret, they do improv the night before.
Mm-hmm.
And so the convention is always kind enough to supply a projector and a nice sound system, and then I just plug my computer in and go. And this particular run was a fun one. Interesting to watch different groups of people play the same game and see how it plays out. But one thing that happened in this one is that was actually a pretty tight game, which is nice. I think Ooh. The last time that I had run this one, one team was so outpaced that I had to like cheat to help them get points to get back in the game. There's ways to do that, but
yeah, it's because I was on the other team and I was just skyrocketing us to victory.
I mean, obviously.
No, that's not what happened.
Yes, and that's how we do this.
It's true. That's what I learned from improv school.
True, true, true. But I always love doing it in person because the feedback is so much more immediate. Mm-hmm. And it's a little bit easier to feel the crowd out. And but it also takes it out of you. Like I'm wearing this ugly crushed velvet suit jacket that I always wear to these things. And by the end of it, it was like, I cannot remove this in front of these people because this shirt is drenched. I am in no shape to do anything.
That's me with my hoodie every time I'm at a convention. It's like, this room is 72 degrees and you better believe this hoodie's staying on.
Mm-hmm. So they didn't kick us out for being too loud, which is good because I cranked it a little bit to just increase the ambiance, which is nice. But again, it was a lot of fun. Small but mighty crowd. People were nice and loud. They clapped along to all the music. Usually, I just make people do that to the theme song, but then every single video intro, they clapped in rhythm to every single video, and that warmed my heart right there. That was also the end of my convention. I've learned that I am too old to try to do things after that's done. Like, it is not worth trying to play a game or trying to squeeze one more thing in. By the time I'm done, it's about 9:30 at night. I'm exhausted. The room is kind of hot anyway. And Sunday, we're always traveling back. So that's always how my convention stops, is with me ending a show and then packing up a bunch of gear. But a couple of people mm-hmm. were nice enough to stay behind, and we just, like, talked afterward. Like, I was kind of packing up gear. They're like, can we help with anything? I'm like, no, I'm kind of too anal about this. I'll handle it. But you can stay and keep me company.
Just like Jamie with games.
Right, exactly.
Get those sleeves
so, but that was pleasant. And I got to see a person named Chad, who I would consider confam. Carl was there. Jason was there. A couple people that I only see at these things. And they kind of stayed behind and helped me pass the time while I was packing gear. So it was good.
Dope. It sounds like a really nice way to cap off the con experience.
Yeah, it's interesting that I've seen panels at cons, and they tend to be, you know, live podcasts, which are a lot of fun. But you don't see a lot of, like, performance at these things, or at least mm-hmm. none of the ones that I've been to. And so we try to make it a performance and give something really different to what you would see if you're out on the floor. So it is a nice way to kind of end things with a sort of nice positive energy of that. And then, okay, we're just going to walk away from that and not end it on overtired playing one more game that I can't learn the rules to. And because I'm too sweaty and exhausted. So
that's fair.
Yeah,
totally fair. It's important to know what your own limits are. And that's something that I had to learn. And I had to relearn once again in 2023. And it's going much better now. Oh, it's going so much better. I played so many games for fun, which is weird. Like, not just to, like, playtest mine or someone else's game. It's pretty cool.
It is exciting to just playtest for fun.
Yeah, definitely try it.
Play for fun. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Also play test for fun. Yes. Yeah. I did have one string of legitimate business meeting at Granite Game Summit that had good results, which is exciting. So I was not trying to do any legitimate business meeting, but certain company, I mean, I could say it on the podcast, it's not a secret. Wise Wizard was there. Rob was there with his family and stuff. I met his adorable new puppy that is the daughter of two of their other dogs and is being trained to be a service dog. And so she's like 8 months old, surrounded by people, 10 months old, sorry, 10 months old. And so she's going crazy, crazy, crazy. And then as soon as they're like, okay, settle, she's like, all right, and just lays down flat. She's less than a year old. Oh, she's so good. Anyway, probably my favorite part of the con actually was just hanging out with that dog. But so we did that podcast recently, Jason, with Zoe about alternate ways to get your game out there. And I've been stressing out, you know, if you're in the any of the servers or anything, you know that one of my two games I actually have the contract for, and we are now, you know, a year out, and I still don't have the actual contract for Fight Sequence. Mm-hmm. So that's been stressful, and I didn't realize how stressful it was to me until I started taking my attention disorder medication. Now my brain actually works, and I'm like, ah, yes, this is not working for me. And so I've been trying to feel like I could have any momentum on it at all. So I was talking to a new publisher, and then I was reminded why I don't want to pitch it to anyone. And I was thinking about self-publishing things. And so the week leading up to Granite Game Summit, I was thinking about logistics for self-publishing stuff. And like just doing it on drive-through cards just to like get the game out there, even if it's at a loss. I just, you know, it's my precious baby child and I need it to exist. And so I talked to the community. The community was on board. And then Gil Hova was at the Granite Game Summit. And he played it and he was like, I support your decision. I think that's cool. It's take it from me. I know how easy it is to get burnt out on self-publishing the big way. And I was like, yeah, I definitely don't want to do that. Side note, Gil Hova remains the best. And I'm so glad I got to see him again and that he's 1,000%. Playing games again.
Gil's awesome. So
he gave me a bunch of good advice on that. And then I talked to my friend Max at Resonim and Bryn at Doomsday Robots. And they gave me a lot of detailed advice about like, you know, here are ways that you could make it not stressful, but also not drive through cards and like go a couple levels up. And even that was like, I am very burnt out just from talking about this stuff, which was a key thing of like, yeah, that really reminded me, yes, I do want to sign it to Wise Wizard. And then finally I had my meeting with Rob and it went really well, where he, you know, communication with your publisher is very important is what I learned, because I didn't realize how stressed out I was. He didn't realize how stressed out I was. So now he is urgently considering the contract. The meeting is tomorrow. And then he put the meeting in the calendar right then and there, and then said that the contract deadline, like the contract will show up by the end of the month. I'm like, okay, dope. So that happened, and that is very great. Cool. So now we're back on track there.
Awesome.
And I feel rejuvenated again.
That's good. That's good. And plus one for rejuvenation.
Oh, yeah. Yes. It's important. And that's been my theme of 2024 is like get rejuvenated in board game design world again, because I got, I was ready to like lock myself away for a year.
Yeah. I mean, I've certainly been through that in my own creative endeavors where you get to this point where you start thinking like, is this a job? Like, did I sign myself up mm-hmm. for something that's taking away from me more than I'm getting from it? Right.
Yeah.
And
I mean, we even
those...
talked about that over dinner at the game.
Absolutely.
Summit.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where you have to have those honest conversations with yourself and with the people that you're collaborating with to figure that out. Because I think it was James Ernest in some quote in a magazine or something somewhere said something like, don't start a game company unless you like running companies more than you like making games. Right.
Oh yeah.
It's that one always stuck with me, because it's very easy to get sucked into the grind of it and forget why you love doing this. You know, I'm glad to hear that things are moving in a positive direction for Fight Sequence. And we're reclaiming some of that positivity and energy behind it, because that's just so important, especially with like the one project like that, the one that you care about the most and really want to drive forward.
And I know that people, you know, give the advice to not get too attached. And I'm like, you're speaking from just one perspective and I can't not get attached because this is important to me. But also, like, I didn't realize how demotivated I was. And when I started telling that to Rob, like, you know, I can tell this is stressing me out because I've been losing my motivation to work on it. I don't know how to explain this quickly. He didn't interrupt me, but he was so eager to get his response out of like, that's not okay. And I'm going to fix it, that he like jumped on my last couple of words. So I knew that it was, you know, an earnest response, an earnest and trustworthy response, you know? So I'm feeling real good about it now. Chris, do you know Tim Blank runs the Boston Game Makers Guild, has published a few games?
I don't know that I have. I might have run into him, but I don't know the name.
Yeah. Well, when I was back way back in the day, when I was still thinking I was going to self-publish Fight Sequence and all that stuff, Tim has told me the story multiple times. He keeps telling me, like, he'll tell it to me like once every year or 2 years, about how he self-published his first game, Oh My Gods, because it was important to him. He did all the art himself and all this other stuff. And then he was, you know, getting his game out there. He was doing conventions. He was running booths, all this stuff, for Oh My Gods. And he was making a lot of connections in the industry. And then he was complaining to another person who is on the leadership team of the Game Makers Guild, was saying like, damn, you know, I'm doing all this stuff and I feel like I'm doing so much work and I'm making so many connections, but I feel like I can't, like, I haven't designed a game in years. And then Jeff, the person he was talking to, was like, well, are you a publisher or are you a designer? And Tim was like, Oh yeah, I'm a designer. I'm not a publisher. And then he started signing his games to publishers instead. Because you really only do have the time for one or the other. Or you just have to be okay with only putting out games once every couple of years. I mean, Matthew Hawker is a friend of, I think, all three of us, ?
I like and, him most of the time.
Yeah, he's our right. friend most of he's the time. Okay. He's all right, Matthew, if you're listening. Just know that one of us will throw a coffee at you.
The bidding war starts now.
Yes. It might not be me. I left it vague on purpose. He does the whole thing himself. I mean, he hires freelancers for graphic design and stuff, but he is the one person that I have seen really enjoy the process of doing everything himself. But you know, the downside is that, you know, he's been working on Lily Hop, getting Lily Hop out there for 3 or 4 years now. And it's coming up, you know, we rounded the last corner. So hopefully it's coming up soon because a lot of people are excited about it.
I think it just depends on what's important to you, you know, and I think you can do both. It's just,
yeah,
you have to realize the time it's going to take to do both, you know?
Yeah.
There are two very different disciplines, that require very different, skill sets. So
yeah, 100%. I heard this, I've never heard this way to say it, but at PAX East and Granite Game Summit, I heard it multiple times from friends of mine, is, talking about what fills your cup versus empties your cup. And I know that all the things related to publishing, figuring out logistics and fulfillment and marketing, that absolutely takes my cup and throws it at Chris. Absolutely nixes the whole thing. The designing and the playtesting, the iterating development, that is the stuff that fills my cup. And you tend to not have as much time for that and also be able to like do a full-time job and have a fulfilling life. If you are having your cup emptied by one half and filled by the other, it's like, that's not the right balance, you know? At least it's not the right balance for me. And
though, is if having, and I'm not picking on you about Fight Sequence with this, like, I mean, you absolutely are,
and you're in your right to.
You're particular about Fight Sequence. You're persnickety about how you want it to be, right? You have vision of the exact thing you want, which is okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Does it make it trouble with some publishers? Absolutely. Oh, yeah. But you're aware of that. And so that's what matters. You're in danger when you're not aware of that. And that's when it's a problem. You're like, oh no, it's fine. Yeah. They'll do exactly what I want. They might not. So you got to know that, right? So I think the question you have to ask yourself or anyone in your position is, if having what you consider that perfect version of the game, right? Perfect in your eyes, right? Perfect, perfect version as in the version you need to be out there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does that fill your cup more than the work it takes of unfilling it to put it out there, rather right. than if a company puts it out there not what you want, is that still going to fill your cup enough? Right? It's tough. It's a tough dichotomy, kind of like, how do you want to, you know, I mean, there's just some, that is a big fork in the road there with those two choices, mm-hmm. you know, and like with a company like Wise Wizard, you've found what hopefully will be the best of both worlds, which is you get yeah. what you want and that vision out without, you know, losing your mind in the process.
yeah.
Yeah. So it's tough. I do not envy your position with that. I mean, I know what it's like to be that passionate about. I don't know that I know what it's like to be that passionate about a game, but I have an understanding of some of the stuff, you know, with Build a Fire, Build It Big that I'm going to put out. I made that choice because other publishers wanted to make some tweaks to it that I was like, you know what? It's not worth it. Like, I know mm-hmm. what the game is. And in my case, it's 18 cards. Ayo, so that's real easy, you know. Like,
yeah.
I have a better way to do that than the huge hoops you would have to jump through. So
yeah.
Yeah.
There's something to be said for that though, in that, like, is this game gonna say what I want it to say to people?
Exactly. Yeah. Right?
Like, in my own experience, with my one and done game design experience, I got some great feedback from testers with some great changes that may have made it a better and more streamlined game, but it would have taken away the sort of subtle signals of what the game was trying to be and what it was trying mm-hmm. to suggest to its audience. And it was like, this is a great game. It is not my game, right?
Right. Yes.
Right.
And that's... Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, that's actually something that I've been thinking a lot after my PAX East experience. So PAX East was there actually, I can't believe I forgot about this for a hot second, but there is something notable at PAX East. As you know, I did that development contract for Snowbright Studios. Mm-hmm. We recorded a couple episodes about it. So we that did. Game is now for sale as of PAX East. Woo-hoo! So PAX East was its first time nice. Out in the wild, Harvest nice. Hoppers. You can get it from, I think you could get it from the Snowbright Studios website now, too. But yeah, Harvest Hoppers, I made the two-player mode, and I did a whole bunch of general development on it. And I had this experience where I, you know, because I'm thinking about, like, what is the story the game is telling? And, like, some people are really going to resonate with it, and some people aren't, and that's okay. And that takes a bunch of different forms, such as I went to the Snowbright booth. I saw Harvest Hoppers. I got really excited. I leaned in to, like, watch the demoer who was volunteering at Snowbright demo it to one person, right? So they're demoing the two-player mode, which is the thing that I made. That's my baby. That page of rules is mine. And the demoer taught it incorrectly. And I made a couple rounds, like, talking to other people, and I looped back a couple times, and I got there at the end of the game, and the demoer confessed. So the demoer, like, got a couple of the rules wrong and also got all of the two-player related rules wrong, just, like, didn't teach that part. And, like, left one thing out and all this other stuff. And I'm like, all right, cool. You know, that is a thing that happened. I'm not going to jump in because that's not my place. I would feel very rude if I did that. And at the end of the demoer was like, I'm sorry if that was choppy and uncomfortable. You know, I've only played this twice. This was my second time playing it. And the person across from her, from them, the person across from them said, this was amazing, and I'm going to buy two copies so I can give one to my friend. And I'm like, damn, that is yet another example of a game does not have to be perfect. Nothing has to be perfect to be loved or lovable. And also, no matter how hard you work on the rulebook, Matthew Hawker, I know you've been working on that rulebook forever. eventually, you just, like, no matter what, people are going to learn it wrong and teach it wrong and teach their friends wrong, teach it wrong at cons, and people are going to buy it anyway. People are going to love it anyway. And there are going to be people that, like, will never get the rules fully right. And that's okay. That, you know, the importance is what they get from the experience. You know what I mean? And so no matter how perfectly you present the message that you are trying to present, some people will pick up on it and some people won't. And that is how that goes.
Yeah, game designers choose an art form which is experienced through a plexiglass wall with rubber gloves on, right?
Like, oh, that's, God. That's... I just got a chill, like, thinking about having that on my hand and touching the wall, it's like, oh God, oh, I don't like that.
But it's the sort of like, I watch a movie, you're getting exactly what the author's intent is, right? Because it's all locked in amber forever. But then there's that layer of translation that even like books, you know, you'll imagine things differently than the next author over. But a game, right, you might actually interact with it in an entirely different way that was never ever intended. And and that's what we've signed up for in this crazy business. And you got to roll with it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Roll estate with it.
Whoa!
Oh, roll estate.
Available for $3 on PNP Arcade. That's plug number two, kids.
we're going to
get the hat trick before this one's over.
Yeah, yeah. We got to follow the rule of threes. We're comedians. We know this. you can't leave them jonesing for the third one.
No.
Can't do it.
That might be a good episode title, too, but I really hope it's talking about how I threw a coffee at Chris Michaud. That was what I was referencing before of, like, that's the thing that I really want to be the episode title, because it's a warning more than anything.
Frankly.
I have a feeling that I can both make that happen and still annoy you about it, so.
Hey, speaking of annoying Jamie, I feel like we have to get to this because they teased it earlier in the episode.
So I
did exact some revenge on Jamie later on in the con. And that was,
I was contractually obligated to play 20 minutes of one of Chris's prototypes. And I actually want to talk about this too, because I have a follow up for it.
Okay. All right, go for it. No, you first. Okay, sure. So
launch it. You launch it.
Dug out of mothballs for the first time since before 2020. No, it would have been early 2020. So the last time I played this game with anybody was like 3 weeks before the schools closed in 2020, if that gives you any context. And it was at Granite Game Summit. And it was a just-for-fun prototype that I put together. It's one of these projects that I do like as a stunt, basically, which is all my creative projects, frankly. But I, for whatever reason, got it into my head, wouldn't it be fun to try to make a board game version of the Nintendo version of Ghostbusters, widely known as one of the worst video games ever made, NES Ghostbusters. Let's make that into a board game and see if we can make it work. And I got far enough into the design.
See if we can make it worse.
Yes to all.
D, all of the above.
And so I took it out of mothballs just for the fun of it, because I hadn't touched it in quite a while. And other than Mall Night Long, I usually try to bring something creative to kind of show people. And this is basically all I got, because I haven't worked on game design other than game shows for 4 years. And so to extract my pound of flesh for getting coffee poured on me, I made Jamie play 20 minutes of this game, which I was convinced we would get a third of the way through, and we actually managed to finish the game, which was amazing.
I tried to start the timer when Chris started explaining the rules, and he immediately caught it. Frame one was like, no way, you stop that right now. And the game itself was finished in like 18 and a half minutes.
Wow.
But yeah, it sure was a game.
It sure
was. I was the one. No. All right. So here's why I want to talk about this. So I gave like actual actionable feedback at the end, because I treated it like a real playtest. But the big thing that I wanted to talk about is that, so Chris talked about showing me the game, about how it's revenge, all this other stuff, about how it's a stunt, all this other stuff. What he did not say was the 2 hours of conversation leading up to it that Chris was saying at the Granite Game Summit, where he kept talking down to himself as a designer. He kept trash talking himself. He kept trash talking his game designs, all this other stuff. And, you know, tying into thinking about it like a revenge prank, all this other stuff. And the reason why I was so adamant about taking it seriously is that that entire time that you were talking like that, I heard myself talking to myself about my own games and my own creative process. And something that I try to do a lot in my general life, in my personal life, is like when I hear people being mean to themselves, I try to, you know, I call them out on it. And I'm like, hey, you know, be nice to them. They're my friend. You are my friend. Please be nice to you. That's my typical like offhanded way to do it. But then if it's bad enough, I like, you know, when I feel like it is appropriate and I feel empowered to, I will sit people down and be like, hey, it is actually like you are internalizing this and I can tell. And it's really, really stressful for me as your friend, because I can tell that you are like really holding yourself back and bringing yourself down. And so that was something that I like immediately was catching Chris doing. And so I wanted to play the game and take it seriously and be like, no, like this is actually like here, this scaffolding of the game is actually fun and interesting for people who like push your luck stuff. It was because it's so easy to catch other people doing it and so hard to catch yourself doing it. And it's insidious. It's really tough to like snap out of that. And I realized that like, cause Granite Game Summit was my first for fun convention after the nonsense that I put myself through in the like latter two thirds of 2023 conventions. And so I was realizing that like that I was saying a lot of similar things to myself towards the end of 2023. So.
Aw, nice words for Chris.
I like this is it. The only time.
I thought you were going to be like, Chris, I played your game and I got to tell you, it was awesome. Lee horrible. I hated it.
Yeah. You thought I was going to pull a fast one. And then I did, but in a different direction.
So now I have to play this Ghostbusters game.
So the thing is, like, my creative process is often trying to provoke negative reactions for people.
No lies detected.
If you've played them all night long, you know that occasionally I'll throw something in there to make people mad. Like, that's... So I think two things can be true. I think it is absolutely true that... we need to watch ourselves. We need to make sure that we're mindful of our self-talk. And that was a good reminder for me to do that, right? To make sure that I'm not overcorrecting in trying to be humble about things and not sort of driving too far in that direction, because you do internalize that. And it is also true that I have a very sick sense of humor and... will occasionally try to create experiences that I think will kind of upset people. Just to see.
I mean, and that's, we need, you know, it takes a village, you know, we need all kinds.
I don't know where that analogy came from with that, but it almost made Chris do a spit
take. Yeah.
It was worthwhile.
I was so close. Oh, because throwing a drink at Chris is okay if Chris also does it.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Absolutely.
Oh, good times.
But that was a good time. I enjoyed playing Fight Sequence again for the first time in quite a while.
Yay.
And trying some of the different sort of approaches that Jamie was taking to, I guess it was, if I remember correctly, Jamie, correct me if I'm wrong, you were trying some things out as far as how the initial play of the game is presented and can you do it in one deck? Am I getting that right?
Yeah. Yeah. Trying onboarding. Yeah. A direction that everyone involved in the production of Fight Sequence really likes is instead of it having boxes that come out once every year or two that have multiple characters, it's each character has their own individual boxes. And the initial release will be a crowdfunding or a straight to retail that's like a collector edition of the set one. And then after that, it's just individual characters coming out every so often, more frequently. And so I was testing out if a character deck could be split in half to emulate the experience of what I have done and perfected with the Academy deck, which is what I use for like quick demos at cons. Particularly because this is in the wake of me cutting a major mechanic, which I think is the most important change I have ever made to Fight Sequence, tied with the sequences being a limited number of actions instead of infinite. But it's a mechanic that I've been working on the game for almost a decade, This is a mechanic that has been there since the start. I literally have multiple characters built around it, and I have never been able to feel fully comfortable with it. It's always been the strongest or weakest thing you can do. And it's always been tough to balance. And I got out of a play when I showed it to the other publisher, as soon as we were done playing, I was like, that sure was 15 different little rules that took over 5 minutes to explain, which was more than half of the differences between the Academy and the character decks. And then it came up exactly one time. And then in my, you know, clarity of mind, thanks to my new treatments that I'm getting for attention disorder stuff. After that playtest, I was like, oh, I'm cutting it. That's easy. Easy peasy. It took 5 minutes to explain. It was 15 rules. Happened once. Easy, easy out. And I was
nice.
Maybe I was in denial about how little relevance it had in the game. But, you know, it can be tough if you have something in your game for 8 years. But if it doesn't work, cut it.
That's a long time to keep something and to hold on to it. But it must have felt good to start to see it flower after that. And,
Every single person loves it. And all the people in the community, all the people that have played before, I ask them, hey, did you miss that thing? Or do you like the new way? And they're like, I absolutely do not miss the new way. I showed it to my friend Matt, who's one of my best friends. He went to school for game design, but he's not in playtesting communities. And he is that friend that, like, he's super smart. And I love the feedback that he gives me. But getting the feedback is like pulling teeth, because if he has negative things to say, you have to, like, egg him on over multiple months to like get him to say it.
Come on, get so mad at me.
Played, yeah, when he first
look me in the eye and say what you think.
Yeah, exactly. He's very non-confrontational. So it took me like 2 years to find out how he first felt about fight sequence when he first played it, like a couple years before the pandemic started. And then his appreciation for it grew each time. And I saw the light in his eyes when he like finally liked the game. It was like the fourth or fifth playtest after a few years of knowing him. And what he said about it was, I used to say to my friends when I described this game, I really like all the things the game is doing, except for this mechanic. I think it's clunky and all this other stuff. And now I just get to stop at, I like all the things this game is doing. And I was like, I love that you tell me this 2 years later. But, you know, that's the kind of friend that is. But yeah, nobody misses it. I don't miss it. Everyone's excited about it. It's liberating to, and of course I have to, like, for the millionth time, I have to go back and redesign a bunch of decks, but it is something I feel excited about. And that is the biggest key. Like, you got to trust your gut on things like that. Got to trust your gut. If you feel better about it, that means it's correct, at least until it isn't correct anymore. But
I say that is a good positive note to end on. I like that.
Yeah.
So I've enjoyed hearing about Granite Game Summit. It makes me want to go more. It makes me want to wear waterproof pants.
It's probably a smart move. And I think as a game designer, it's not like an unpub where you're going to be playtesting all the time. It's not like a PAX Unplugged or a Gen Con where you're going to be pitching all the time. But I feel like it's a great hybrid where there's enough industry presence that you could do some business there. There's enough willing playtesters that you could round up a couple of tests and get some work done, but you're also just going to have a great time.
Yeah,
a very laid-back, relaxed environment at a very reasonable cost. A++++.
It's awesome. Yeah, I love it. Yeah. And it's my first Granite Game Summit was 2 years ago when Kim was like, I want more diverse designers. Who do you know? And a bunch of people put my name forward and I went there to show off Fight Sequence. That's actually where I initially met Wise Wizard and we started talking about maybe signing Fight Sequence to them. And then the only other Granite Game Summit that I went to was a couple weeks ago. And Kim was telling me about how people keep asking about my game and like, is it out yet? Does anyone have it here? And I'm like, that's incredible.
That's great.
That it's, you know, it's this like little local community. It's 250 people or so. It's very little baby, but like a lot of it is you just go and you just vibe with other people who like games and you play from this random wall of awesome games.
I like vibing. I don't really care for people, but
50-50. 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
That's the second time I made that reference earlier today. I was like, you got to go with the meatloaf reference. Well, hey, y'all, this has been fun hearing about this. And yeah, it's always good to have both of you on the show.
Oh, yeah.
Chris, you've already pitched some of your stuff. Is there anything else you want to throw out there to make sure you are, you know, making use of trick. Your time here.
All right. So if you like canceled podcasts.
Podcasts where people just gave up after 100 right. episodes.
If you like podcasts that ran from 2012 to 2017, and if you want to maybe try to understand why I occasionally try to make people upset and in the game design world, Flip the Table is a show about cheesy, weird, and obscure board games, which all the episodes are still up and can still be found in some of the podcatchers of your choice, like Stitcher's dead. I'm not going to resubmit it to any of the new things, but it's there at tableflipsu.com. You can find it very easily. Buy Roll Estate for $3 at PNP Arcade. Hire your own private game show at playemallnightlong@gmail.com. I'll give you all the details there, or just look me up on Facebook. Those are all the things.
And for Jamie, you can reach out to them on Discord. Nowhere yes. else. Just Discord. No. Do it up.
And you can email me if you want.
At triplerainbowgames@jamie.com.
Wow. What, yes. What, I don't know. In that exact order.
Jamie@triplerainbowgames. Is that it?
Yeah. Jamie@triplerainbowgames.com.
Boom. I was so close. I had all the
feedback on this episode. You had a couple extra. Trash at triplerainbowgames.com.
Wow.
But if you want to get in touch with the podcast, I don't know why you would, but you can reach out to us by going to buildthegamepodcast.com.
Listen, be nice to the podcast. It's my
and
friend.
Joining our Discord. You can also email us to buildthegamepodcast@gmail.com. Tell me why you run a video game company and you want to come on the podcast and talk about your video games. At least it's not crypto. But of course, you can keep coming back every single week because we have well over 600 episodes because I did not quit when I hit 100. Like some silly old podcast that went 5 years and only made 100 episodes. But anyways, wow. Water under the bridge. You can keep coming back every single week. And until next time, good night.
Oye suminasai.
Bye.
Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. Building the game with Jason and friends, with Jason and friends. The end of the episode, that's
when it technically ends.